The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Coming at you on Thursday afternoon, early evening. What time? 4 o'clock. What should I say? Thursday what? Heath, what do you think? Or is it evening? Early evening?
It is definitely afternoon.
Really? Yeah. Doesn't feel like the afternoon.
It's only one here, so we'll split the difference and say it's like three because it's a weighted average of our times.
It's almost dinner time, you know? Like it's going to be dinner soon.
It will be evening when we're done.
That's probably true
right now.
No, we're doing a 20-minute show today. Fantasy Football Today in 20. Welcome to the show. A lot of ADP today as we get you ready for what's probably a busy weekend of drafting. I know the following weekend is a very busy weekend for drafting, so we've got a ton of draft prep coming your way on Fantasy Football Today in the next 8 days or so and then beyond. And of course, CBS Sports HQ got you covered noon Eastern Monday through Friday right now. Throughout the season, we're going to have so much coverage on HQ. We'll tell you all about that. I'm Adam Azer with Heath Cummings and Ben Gretsch. And I've got a lot of segments today. We got news on David Montgomery. We got news on Joe Mixon. We got news on Saquon Barkley. We got news on Daryl Henderson. We got three players that we pretty much never talk about that I want to talk about, but we're going to focus a lot on average draft position, who's rising and falling in CBS leagues. And Heath does a great story every year. Values on other websites. Looking at ADP on Yahoo and ESPN, and we're not criticizing them, just players that we think based on their ADP are going too low or too high. So if you're playing on a Yahoo or ESPN league, we hate you for it, but we forgive you and we'll give you some great values that you can put in your pocket and dominate your league. Let's start with the most undervalued player in fantasy right now. Who is it, Heath?
It's Tariq Cohen. And it was Tariq Cohen before David Montgomery got hurt. But it's definitely Tariq Cohen now. And you just look at last year, as bad and miserable as he was last year, he still had 7 of his 16 games where he caught at least 6 passes. That is PPR gold. And more often than not, that's going to lead to 6 or 7 boom weeks for as a PPR running back. They play week 1 against the Detroit Lions. The most likely scenario at this point, I would say, is that David Montgomery is not going to be there. Tariq Cohen's probably going to be a top 12 PPR running back, and that's not because I think he's going to get 15 carries. But I think if you're giving him 8 to 10 carries now, in addition to what he does in the passing game, in a game where the Bears probably won't be down by 100, that's how he's going to start off, and he's going to have multiple of those weeks throughout the year.
Okay, is Tariq Cohen only the most valuable or the most undervalued player right now in PPR leagues?
In leagues where catches count. Like, I think I looked at his ADP on a half PPR basis today, and it was like round 11 or 12. And so that's still, but if you're in a league where it's just non-PPR, no catches at all, I think when Montgomery's out, he can still be a fine flex in that format. And maybe when he's not, but he's only the most underrated player in PPR. Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. Ben, who's the most undervalued player? Oh, wait. You know what? Do we say where Tariq Cohen was being drafted? Probably put that in. Oh, you did? Okay. Sorry.
Well, it depends. It depends wildly, I think, on the site. But CBS ADP? Mostly he's available in like round 8, round 9 of any draft, it seems like.
Okay. And PPR on fantasy and on Fantasy Pros and PPR, he's going 90th overall.
So, on CBS, he's going 90th overall.
How about that?
That's where he's going, 8th round.
Cool. All right, Ben, you're up.
I don't know. I have one for each position, but I'll say Christian Kirk. I think Christian Kirk is the guy that I have not understood. He goes at the very end of the kind of top 36 or top 40 receivers. I think he belongs somewhere higher than that. I don't think he's necessarily like in the Michael Gallup, Tyler Boyd range, but I don't think he is very far off. He's been a really big value. There's a lot of guys like I've mentioned before, I'm not very high on Marvin Jones, but there's a lot of guys like that, some veterans that creep up ahead of Christian Kirk that I just don't understand. I don't see the upside there. And I know we disagree on that, Heath, with Marvin Jones, but like some players like that, Julian Edelman, who's 33, has a new quarterback, has played 16 games only like three times in his career. I don't understand how you would take somebody like that. I don't see how that person comes back and has another top 10 year.
You're saying you don't see how someone would take Edelman over Christian Kirk?
Yes. I don't understand that at all.
Wow.
Based on 2019. Doing that. He was a top time.
It's not based on 2019. It's based on every healthy year. Every year that Edelman's had in like the last 5 or 6 years, he's basically been the same exact player.
And the year before last year, he was out for 4 games. He was suspended. I guess he wasn't injured the year before. And then the year before that, he missed the entire season in 2017. Mostly it's just based on last year. And then the other time he played 16 games in 2016 and the other time he played 16 games in 2013. Okay, fine. Yeah, those 3 years.
Man, I was like...
He was pretty good in 2018, right?
Yeah, he was awesome in 2018. Yeah. Like, the thing is, I was with you when you said Christian Kirk was undervalued, but now you're saying you can't see why someone would take him over Edelman. Someone would take Edelman over him? Really? Like,
yes. He's 33 years old.
But he's been so much more productive.
A lot of old guys are productive because they've been in the league a long time. Christian Kirk's in his third season. Through an ankle injury last year. He was much more efficient as a rookie, had a strong prospect profile, an emerging offense. Love him as a third-year breakout.
You want
to buy into breakout players that are emerging. Of course, guys that I'm saying are going to break out for the first time don't have a long production record. Of course.
But I think the thing that people, and I don't necessarily disagree. I mean, he was one of the ones I chose off of Yahoo because somehow his ADP is like 160th.
Wow.
They just don't like Christian Kirk over there. So you should draft him in the double digit rounds on your Yahoo draft. Yeah. But I don't see, first off, I think people struggle with the emerging thing because he was so much worse last year than he was in his rookie year. And so it's like, is he getting better? Well, we hope so. And then I think the other thing is, it's like DeAndre Hopkins is, I'm being conservative with Hopkins and I've got him at 140 targets. I still think it's likely Larry Fitzgerald's going to see 100 targets. Mm-hmm. Chase Edmonds and Kenyon Drake are probably going to get close to 100 targets. And so I don't know that there's, like, he has to have a ridiculous efficiency year, in my opinion, to be like a top 20 wide receiver alongside Hopkins.
Yeah, but I don't believe he has to be a top 20 receiver when he's going, you know, in the double digit rounds and all those things. I do think he could have a very good efficiency year. We've seen Fuller do it alongside Hopkins in a similar way. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be Will Fuller. I think Fuller's very talented, but Kirk should be used downfield more. Hopkins is going to be more in the intermediate range. Fitzgerald's underneath. I mean, it just kind of makes sense. But yeah, those are really good points. The first one that you said, struggling with the emerging thing, it's a really good way of breaking down the Kirk and Edelman question. For me, Edelman, without Brady, with the injury history, with a completely new offense that's going to throw away less, there's just no way he can do what he's done in his best of times. But his targets per game are going to come down.
He's like a top 15 receiver. So I completely agree with you. But at his best, Edelman is like a top 15 receiver, and nobody's drafting him to be that. You know, like you're right. He can't. It would be really surprising if he were that good. Like, just to get like 95 catches with Cam Newton, it's never happened. I don't think.
Right.
So I don't even think there's been an 85 catch guy with Cam Newton, but I'm just saying, like, he's being drafted as a number three wide receiver. Nobody's drafting the B, the Edelman. We can move on, but yeah, go ahead. Wrap up your point.
Well, you know, you're making my point for me. It's a philosophical thing where I want to look for ceiling. And I do think there is ceiling with Kirk. There's efficiency potential boom. You just described a player who at best is probably like a wide receiver three. Probably if he's only getting like 80 catches, he's an underneath player. He's not going to be making a bunch of big downfield plays. So and he's got a huge injury history. He's got a huge floor, a lot of downside to him and not much of a ceiling. And so That's why I say I can't see it because of the types of players that I'm going to target.
Okay, fair enough. I think we all like Christian Kirk. I didn't mean to disparage Christian Kirk. Just want to bring up Edelman there. You're both wrong anyway. The most undervalued player is Deebo Samuel, who I keep seeing going like around 120th overall. I just took him in a draft that we just finished. It was an IDP draft, so he went even later than that, I'm pretty sure, and there were defensive players picked. But Deebo Samuel has a chance to be ready for week one. He was seen sprinting at practice. You don't have to draft him as a starter, so you don't need him for week one. If he ends up on the PUP list, then okay, then probably maybe you didn't want to take him. But Samuel had a really good rookie year. He'll run a little bit. I take him a lot. Yay, nay, on Deebo Samuel, good value. Well, let me ask you this. Yeah. Where does Deebo have to go for him to be good value?
No, he's a good value across the board.
I struggle with him just because like a lot of his production last year was not something that he's probably going to do again this year. Like you don't want to count on rushing stats for receivers, generally speaking.
Yeah.
So he has to see an increase in volume, and Brandon Ayuk's making some plays. He's got no chance to be the number one in targets in that team, and they're going to run a ton. But I think he's probably like, if he plays week one, then he is a very good value. I just struggle with what his upside is.
Yeah. So one thing I will just quickly note is there's some really good research that I referenced in a second year wide receiver article on CBS Sports that efficient rookies see more volume. It's an incredibly big increase from year one to year two. We should expect that for Samuel if he's healthy. I do like, we're also concerned about re-injury, but he's so cheap, like Adam said, and especially for people like you guys, or maybe not you, Heath, as much, but people who like to take running backs early, Samuel is a really cheap way to get some actual upside into your receiving core.
But like, and I think the other thing that probably scares people with him is they see Dante Pettis. Dante Pettis was more efficient in his rookie year in San Francisco and then just completely fell out of favor.
That's true. I thought you meant they see Dante Pettis as in like the reports that Dante Pettis is like having a good camp. Okay. All right, let's get to the big news here. So David Montgomery is out 2 to 4 weeks. Their first four games are the Lions, Giants, Falcons, and Colts. So 2 to 4 weeks, and we're, 2 weeks away from the season, basically?
2 weeks from today, the football season is scheduled to play.
Sunday will be 2 weeks from David Montgomery's start of the season. Does this change anything in terms of him and Tariq Cohen and where they should be drafted?
I don't know that it really changes too much for Cohen and where he should be drafted. Like, I thought he was a value before the injury. It changed things for me with Montgomery. I don't think you should take him before like the 7-8 turn.
I wouldn't take him even later, I think.
Yeah, okay. I mean, and that's like Ben didn't like him as much as I did before he was injured. So it's really what it comes down to, I think, is whether you believe that David Montgomery actually has upside as a second year runner or whether you think his bad efficiency as a rookie is just what you're going to get.
Okay. I made the same point you did about Cohen yesterday, though, and I completely agree with that, that it shouldn't change Cohen too much. And now, unfortunately, it might raise his ADP in a way that probably doesn't make sense for the role that he plays because Montgomery shouldn't impact him that much.
Okay, Joe Mixon, dealing with migraines and perhaps a lack of a contract. He is falling three spots right now in CBS ADP, but he's still 15th overall. Right now, Mixon has fallen behind Josh Jacobs and Nick Chubb. So what's your read on the Joe Mixon situation, Ben?
I'm still concerned about the news we heard on HQ that Gio Bernard's still going to play a pass-catching role. A big reason to argue for Mixon, because we know his late-season run was very heavily rushing efficiency base, something that's difficult to repeat. A big reason to believe in him was he's going to finally see the passing work, and they're going to realize they need to use him in the passing game because he's not a guy who plays bell cow snaps. And I don't think people realize that they don't treat him that way, and they never have. And they didn't last year with a new head coach in Zach Taylor. Last season, he played over 75% of the snaps. I believe it's only twice, one time. And then he also hit 75 another time last year. Most of the time he's in like the 60s, and Gio Bernard is playing in a lot of the passing downs. If we're not hearing those types of things, and we're also hearing, they're going to continue to use Gio Bernard, they still like him in the passing game. I don't think he's viable at this draft position.
And also there's this talk of a holdout. Is that a big factor too with Mixon? Are you concerned about him?
Absolutely. There's a lot of ways he can't hit this ADP. But yeah, I was just saying that's the one that I'm even more concerned about is the passing game. We already are not seeing good signs that would justify where he's going. But now, yeah, you add in the migraines and the lack of contract and missing practice. There's pretty much nothing good that can come from that, in my opinion.
I haven't drafted Joe Mixon once this year, and it's not like I was right, but I'm not lowering him because I had him as a mid-second round pick, and he's going to fall to the mid-second round now, maybe. But I think the Gio Bernard thing is the biggest thing here.
Yeah, Mixon had 35 catches last year, and I always say the 50 catch thing. If you don't have 50 catches, very hard to be a top five running back in any format. We've seen that in the last 5 years. There have only been three who have done it: Ezekiel Elliott, Derrick Henry, and Aaron Jones, who had 49 catches. But plenty of running backs finished top 12 with less than 50 catches, including Joe Mixon last year. He was 11th in non-PPR. He was 13th in PPR. It's not like he's completely uninvolved in the passing game.
I've had him 12th.
Right. I was just setting it up. So he only scored 5 rushing touchdowns, 3 receiving touchdowns last year. For Mixon, Chubb, Jacobs, Mixon. Rank them.
In what format?
Full PPR. Because all three of them have concerns.
I will not draft any of them anymore this year. So it does not matter to me what I
rank. Man, the no running back thing, the dead zone has been extended to like pick 7 now.
No, it's not. This is not dead zone, but these guys have ADPs that are very high for no foreseeable receiving role. Like Chubb, we know Hunt is going to play a ton. All that they've been saying in Cleveland is Hunt's going to play as much as him.
But right? What about 35 catches? That's not enough for you to warrant like a top 18 pick?
No, you just
said
the top 5 thing. And yeah, maybe you'll get a low-end RB1, but why would you take that in the top 20 picks of your draft?
I'll tell you,
why are you trying
honestly,
to get a back end?
It's a great question, and I'll tell you why for me. Because I love the wide receivers I can get in rounds 3 and 4. And I still feel like the wide receivers I can get in rounds 3 and 4, especially the ones that you love, DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley, Juju Smith-Schuster, like they're going so late that Mixon is so much better. Chubb, Mixon, they're so much better, in my opinion, than the other running backs. I know you're going to say skip all those running backs, but I think a lot of people say, no, like I don't mind Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb, Josh Jacobs, even if they're not going to have those 50 catches in round 2. And you come back and you take DJ Moore, you take Juju Smith-Schuster, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, a combination of those 4, 2 of them.
Yeah, and you're going to have a lot really good fourth place teams this year.
I don't know.
I'm happy for you for that.
I think the explosive upside.
Michael Thomas is better than those receivers. I like him, but like you still got to have a good player on your team somewhere.
Well, we're
you
not
back end
Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb and Josh Jacobs are going to be good.
Let's clarify this because I am 100% team Ben on this. If we're talking Michael Thomas versus these running backs. I don't think that's the decision most people are going to have to make.
I'm team Ben there too. I'm not talking about that either.
The elite receiver stretching through Julio to the receivers later Adam can get. And the roster you build is a non-elite upside running back and non-elite upside receivers. Probably. I mean, very good receivers that I like too, but I would rather take an elite upside receiver in those top 20 picks.
I will go Chubb, Mixon, Jacobs. And I would take any of them happily in the second half of the first round. But none of them before pick 19. So
the
it's not
second
that
half
much
of
different,
the second, wait,
second half of the second round, yes.
second round, not the first.
I want both the tight ends and I want those 4 wide receivers. And I obviously want Austin Eckler and Derrick Henry over them. But I'm happy with those guys in the back half of the second round. I would take them because that's the point where you're choosing between them and DJ Moore, Chris Godwin, Juju Smith-Schuster. And that's the point where I'm choosing those running backs.
If they fall that far and the 2 tight ends are gone, there are scenarios where I'd take them. That's not where their ADP is right now, but they do go that late in some of our drafts.
This is to me the single biggest decision in fantasy this year.
Wow. Do you have some big music to play or something? Like this is...
Let's see.
Mark the tape.
Should have some big music, right? I don't know. Big decision,
absolutely
everybody.
Absolutely perfect.
I do think it's...
Wait, hold on, Ben. Hold on. Within Ben's argument with me, I think we actually have some common ground. Because I think, when you talk about Michael Thomas, Davante Adams, Julio Jones, and who's the 4th? Tyreek Hill?
For sure.
Okay. I agree, I think we're basically having a PPR discussion.
Yes.
Like, I am probably taking Julio Jones over them, although I wouldn't mind getting, like, Jacobs and Jones. But I think after Julio Jones, the number five wide receiver for me, whether it's probably Godwin, I think I'm taking at least two of those three running backs that we just talked about. I'm definitely taking Mixon and Jacobs over him.
That's probably fair.
I don't know about Chubb.
There is common ground there.
Yeah.
But what about Kelce and Kittle for you?
Kelce over Chubb. I actually made that decision in a draft today, I think. I don't remember. I made that decision. Kelce over Chubb. I'm going to do that in full PPR, not in half, not in non. And I think I'm still going to take Mixon and Jacobs over Kelce. But I could definitely see the argument. I actually think we have more in common on this than you think we do. Because, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I would say in the top 20 picks, all their ADP that I'm looking at is in the top 18. But as Heath noted, there's only so many players that can go in the top 18. And he said he would take him outside the top 19. So we are kind of all saying similar things. Like, some of these guys do fall outside the top 20 sometimes. That's not ridiculous.
Yeah, actually, if we had Dave and Jamie on here, the argument might be different. But I feel like the three of us are not taking, we don't see Joe Mixon as a first rounder in PPR.
Jamie has come around on that as well. I think he is now taking Jacobs over Mixon. Like, he is pretty concerned about this situation with Mixon.
Yeah, I'm not even concerned. It's exactly what it was. What it's always been. It's not, oh, Gio Bernard's gonna have a role in the passing game. Yeah, duh.
No, I think he is concerned about the migraine and the hold in, and if there's anything going on there, and we don't know.
Okay, I gotcha.
And Adam, I've been taking Joe Mixon in the first round, and pretty much any time I'm in that nine spot, and I can't take him in the first round right now. We're too close to the season to take any sort of risk when I love the running backs right behind him.
So, and I think that's interesting comparing him to Miles Sanders and Kenyon Drake. And my take is that I'm just taking those receivers over all those running backs because I agree with what Shraggy said.
And Ben and I are definitely taking Miles Sanders, right?
I was high enough on Sanders before the concerns that I'm still willing to take that plunge. Not as high as I was, but like, he doesn't fall down that far from me that I wouldn't draft him anymore.
I'll take him at 13. But I'm taking the four receivers, and I've always been taking Eckler and PPR over him, but
typically one of those, so you have him ranked 13th, but typically one of those receivers is there at 13, right?
That's true.
Some of the guys you have behind are going. So yeah, it's a weird discussion because like the way that you have it ranked might not be the way that it actually lays out, but, Sanders, I think around the 1-2 turn, I'm still willing to consider for sure.
Yeah. And I think that for those of you who, you know, you're worried about, you're drafting a player and you're kind of like nervous about it. I mean, I think that's why the most recent draft I did where I had the 12th pick when I went receiver running back ended up being pretty good, or running back receiver, whatever it was Drake, Julio Jones. I didn't feel like taking two running backs. I thought it was a little bit too risky. So that was a full PPR league. So that's an option for you too. A little bit like you get the safety with Julio Jones and you get a big upside play with a guy like Kenyon Drake. That could be a good way for you to start as well. Yeah, go ahead.
No, nothing. It was the same thing that I argue about every time we frame it like that, and there's no reason for me to keep arguing.
Oh, you're saying Julio? No, Julio does have huge upside. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
But he's also safer than Drake.
Kenyon Drake, Eckler, for sure.
Mixon, yes. Right? Like, he's in a PPR
league.
Which is
why I would just take him over them.
Well, I did, but I didn't take him. But I wanted one running back and one wide receiver there.
Right.
All right. So I said to you guys before the show, I got a lot to talk about. We got to go really fast. Oh, well. Darrell Henderson expected to be ready for week one. So, Heath, give me your 2 cents on when to draft the Rams running backs.
I was pretty disappointed in our most recent draft that Cam Akers was taken right before me, and I had the 11th pick in the 6th round. I probably wouldn't have taken him more than like 10 picks before that, but 6th round for Cam Akers feels right. I'm glad Darrell Henderson's going to be back for week one, but I'm still pretty down on him for missing this practice time because he's not an established veteran that they knew what they had. He has to prove something. He didn't prove anything at all last year. So I'm probably still not taking Henderson until round 12. And I took Malcolm Brown in round 22 of the same draft that I just missed Akers. I think he should go probably in like the late teens, but I still expect Malcolm Brown to start week one. And I probably think he'll score the most fantasy points amongst Rams running backs week one.
Okay, I, in this draft that Heath is talking about, I took Cam Akers two picks before Heath in round six, three picks before Heath in round six. I took Daryl Henderson in round nine, middle of round nine. All right, the Jets are acquiring Kalen Ballage. Does this matter?
It matters in that it's hilarious.
Yes, like, play the laugh trick. Play the laugh track.
Adam Gase. Oh, man.
Trading for a running back is always usually a bad move. Trading for a really, really bad running back, I don't care if it's a conditional seventh round pick, you gave up something, anything, for Kalen Ballage in a trade.
Does it matter for Le'Veon Bell?
No.
Okay. Rex Burkhead has been involved for the Patriots. He's not invisible. Does that matter?
I took Rex Burkhead in the 24th round of the draft. We keep citing. I think it matters for the upside of Damian Harris, Sony Michel, Lamar Miller, whichever one wins that job. Because I don't, if Rex Burkhead is healthy, I think he's going to touch the football 6 to 8 times per week. With James White taking passing downs work, that makes it really hard for the other guy to be a great fantasy option.
Bingo.
Pete Carroll says Carlos Hyde will be a big factor for Seattle. Do you buy it?
No, but you can't buy anything Pete Carroll says.
That's kind of true. Philadelphia left tackle Andre Dillard is out for the season with a torn biceps. That is the second starter on the offensive line to go out. I was worried about left tackle before Andre Dillard. He's completely unproven. This does feel like a big story in terms of just the Eagles offensive line, which has been a great offensive line. And you know, we love Miles Sanders. Carson Wentz is a, you know, high draft pick. What are your thoughts here, guys? Is this a, how big of a deal is the Eagles offensive line in general?
I think it's pretty significant. Did you say Dillard's unproven? He was good last year, right? He was like very good.
Not at left tackle. He's moving to left tackle.
Oh, well, now they're going to have to move Jason Peters out there. He was re-signed and brought back to take over the guard spot. And now he's probably going to be back at left tackle. Jason Peters is still probably pretty good, but he's older. And if they keep running into more injuries, if Peters can't stay healthy, they're going to be in a tough spot.
I'm going to, like, I took Carson Wentz in the 12th round of the draft that we did today. I'm going to revisit my Eagles overall offensive efficiency today. So, yeah, I think it does matter, their state of their offensive line.
Okay. Do you guys, can you confirm that? I'm pretty sure he did not. Peters was their left tackle last year, right? And so
yeah, I was just going to look it up, but
they're swinging him over to the left side.
He was their first round pick last season. And I remember a lot of positive buzz about him. If I recall,
I know in camp he had been getting pushed around a lot, but
yeah.
I don't recall. I think you're right, Adam, but I wouldn't wager anything on it.
I would never wager on that. Yeah.
He didn't play full time. I'm looking at his snaps throughout the year. He did play full time from about week 6 to week 9, and then he played a lot again in week 12, and maybe that's just when like Peters was missing some time or something.
Okay. So Saquon Barkley, there was a report that maybe he could be more involved in the passing game. He's been kind of like a 60 catch guy somewhere around there since the second half of his rookie season. First half of his rookie season, he was Matt Forte. He was like 115 catch guy. Then since then, more like a 60 catch guy. What do you think for Barkley? How many catches?
60-ish. Yeah. I like Daniel Jones is a bigger concern for me than anything, just because that style of quarterback doesn't generally lend itself to a lot of, and it didn't last year. I think he was on an 80 target pace in games with Jones. So if he gets 80 targets, it's probably 60 catches.
Okay. Hey, we got a new podcast, Fantasy Football Today in 5. First episode drops on August 31st. What is Fantasy Football Today in 5? It's a 5-minute show, okay? So it's first thing in the morning. You listen to it. You get your quick fix. Then you come over, you listen to this big, long podcast for an hour, and we tell you everything else you need to know. But just want a quick little update on what you need in terms of analysis, in terms of news for fantasy football. Fantasy Football Today in 5. Again, you can subscribe right now. The podcast already exists, but the first official episode will be on August 31st, very early in the morning, first thing in the morning when you wake up. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, your smart speakers, anywhere else podcasts are found. Gonna have to skip around here in the notes. Let's get to the ADP risers at this point. Okay, James Conner on CBS. I got three risers and three fallers. James Conner, You know, Heath can reference the draft that we just did because he was, I'm sure, very pleased.
I'm sure took Connor.
To get him in the third round. I thought Heath was going to take him in the second round. Heath ended up getting him early in the third round. But he's currently up three spots to 31st overall. That might keep on rising. When should we take James Connor?
I would say that the third round is a great time to take James Connor. For me, he's, and Jamie has talked about Aaron Jones being the bridge back. James Connor's that guy. And I've kind of come around on Chris Carson and having concerns about him. I've dropped him a little bit in my rankings, but I still feel pretty good about Connor at the end of that run of running backs that are solid, high-end number two backs.
I pretty much agree with all of that. I've gotten a little bit more excited about Jones, actually. So I'm moving him up a little bit. But I was going to say, I would be more excited to take Connor at his ADP than the Mixon, Jacobs, and Chubb trio that we talked about earlier. And Connor is the one guy from that group that I've been railing on all offseason. Gurley, Gordon, Carson, Bell, David Johnson, Fournette. Connor's the one guy that has now moved ahead of Jonathan Taylor in my rankings. Mm. He moved Jonathan Taylor down a spot.
So, Ben, let me just pick this apart a little bit, okay?
Oh, no.
Because if James Connor continues to rise, you probably can't choose to take him at his ADP over Chubb, Mixon, and Jacobs. You probably have to choose one or the other. Because, yes, if you're saying, I'll take a wide receiver in round two and skip those guys, and then I'll take Connor in round three, great. But what if you don't think you're going to be able to get James Connor with your next pick, and you just straight up have to choose Joe Mixon?
I don't take him. Yeah, I'm not suddenly like going to jump all over running backs because of James Connor. But yeah, if I get him at a good value in the third round, I'll take him.
All right. The height of James Connor, 2018, was probably worthy of like a top eight pick. He probably won't get the same workload. Like I've been mentioning, they don't give him the carries, but will he get the catches? That's a big question for me. Will he get, he's been a big part of the passing game.
He was RB6 playing 13 games in 2018. He was RB9 before he got hurt last year. So I think the expectation is he's going to be like, you're getting a top 12 back on a per game basis. Let's see how many games he can make it through. And listen, if we're going to draft Dalvin Cook fifth, we probably shouldn't drop James Conner down to the third round.
Okay. So how about Juju Smith-Schuster? He's the next riser. Steelers are on the rise. He's up four spots to 42nd overall. Still after Adam Thielen and Amari Cooper. Before DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley. I think our rankings are going to be a lot different than the ADP. But Juju's on the rise right now. And Ben, it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a little bit of a correction there too. Up to 42nd overall almost feels a little bit on the lower side. You see him go in the late second in some formats, not frequently, but typically in the third round. That's still an early fourth round pick. So yeah, I think this is a guy we've talked about as having the potential, if Roethlisberger's right, to be right up there with the target leaders in the entire NFL. Obviously he's got to be right as well, but phenomenal prospect, immediate producer at a very young age, immediate monster second season at 22. Then he has a down year last year at 23, but you got to give him one mulligan and you go back to the well. At least I'm going to.
I will be very curious when we do this next week if he's still rising, because I think he's still too, like he's at least around too low. But the reports the last couple of days have been very favorable to non-Juju Smith-Schuster pass catchers. And there was a report that came out from The Athletic, I think, today that said that it's been hard to highlight things that he's doing well.
I feel like he hasn't been on the field that much, Juju. I think that's true. Yeah.
I think that's partially true, too. Yeah.
And that's one of those reports we talked about, like, what reports do you care about? Like, that's an opinion. Like, we like the ones that are talking about usage. He's running with the first team, this, that, and the other thing. Like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to weigh that too much personally.
I agree with that, other than I do think you should weigh negative opinions more than positive opinions.
Fair.
Because most of it's fluff right now.
Yeah.
Well, I had a segment in today's show that I doubt we'll get to called A Trip Down Memory Lane. I looked at August 14th through the 28th of my notes last year just to get some of these types of reports and see which ones were accurate. Like Philadelphia likes J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who could be a factor this season, according to Yahoo. Matt Nagy says Mitchell Trubisky is recognizing defenses much better this season. But to be quiet, and I have a note from August 16th last year that says Todd Gurley ran 100 miles per hour. So he must have done something really fast in practice or something. I don't know. And also, the Charlotte Observer said this about Curtis Samuel last year. He makes one or two plays every day that bring a wow factor, and it's a safe bet that the same continues once the regular season gets underway. Now, I've highlighted the funny ones. The truth is, the reports that I found in my notes, my podcast notes, were pretty good last year. Like, they were pretty accurate. They led us in the right direction a lot. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Maybe we'll have a chance to go through some of those good ones.
And what's so different about this year is the reports are all we get.
I know.
Like, yeah. We got nothing else, except for if you want to watch highlight videos of catches.
T.Y. Yeah, Hilton.
Now, there was a note here you had that DJ Chark was the most impressive receiver for Jacksonville. That's one we should have listened to.
I know, yeah. T.Y. Hilton is up 10 spots to 60th overall. He's still going after Keenan Allen and A.J. Brown, but before DK Metcalf, Terry McLaurin, and Cortland Sutton. And if Metcalf, McLaurin, and Sutton are round six picks, you're going to like your round six pick. But T.Y. Hilton is on the rise, and this one didn't really, I don't know where it came from.
I'd say some name recognition.
Should he be ahead of Metcalf, McLaurin, and Sutton?
He should not be. Like, his ADP before this was 72, right?
670, I think.
That's too low. He should be rising.
All those wide receivers feel too low.
I'm taking all of those young guys ahead of T.Y. Hilton every day of the week and twice on Sunday, personally.
Surprising absolutely no one. No, I am taking McLaurin. I would definitely take T.Y. Hilton over Metcalf.
What about Sutton?
Coin flip? I'd probably take Hilton, but it's close.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here on Fantasy Football Today. We've got ADP Fallers on CBS, Josh Allen, DeAndre Swift. And did I not? Oh, no. I need another one. I need another Faller. I only found two. Okay, I'll do that during the break. And then we'll look at ESPN and Yahoo, and Heath will tell you where the value is. And we got some more stuff hopefully we'll have time for. But we'll be right back with some ADP Fallers. What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Selling a little? Or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Josh Allen falling in the CBS ADP, 12 spots to QB9. Now, 66th overall, but, you know, there won't be nine quarterbacks off the board in the first 66 picks in our drafts, but hey, maybe in your drafts they will. He's behind Tom Brady. He's behind Drew Brees. Josh Allen is falling. Ben, does that make sense?
Josh Allen falling? Yeah, a little bit. There's, you know, talk that he doesn't want to run as much. I'm more excited now, and probably earlier I was focusing on Allen for his rushing, but I'm more excited now in Matt Ryan, and I had moved Carson Wentz ahead of him. I got to rethink that with the offensive line issues in Philadelphia, but yeah, I'm bumping Allen down a little bit myself as well.
Okay, next is DeAndre Swift. He's down 11 spots to 67th overall, just after Josh Allen. DeAndre Swift is now going after Raheem Mostert and Ronald Jones, but before Kareem Hunt and Cam Akers. Cam Akers is also down 8 spots. Swift is banged up a little bit, Heath. Is that contributing to it? And is 67th overall the right time for Swift?
I think we're now at a full week without DeAndre Swift practicing, right?
Close, yeah.
I think it was last Thursday when he injured it. So, yeah, I think this makes sense. As I was saying, I would rather have Akers right now than I would Swift. And I think round 6 is a good spot for both of them. So this makes more sense to me than round 5 did.
AJ Green is a faller, down 8 spots. Now, I don't really get what's going on with our wide receiver ADP. If this is actually happening, then that's just really interesting to me. But like, he's 97th overall, and he's going in, like, Will Fuller's 96th, Michael Gallup's 96th, Jarvis Landry 96th. You know what? I'm looking at it. Okay, I'm actually a round off. Looking at a different column. What am I looking at? Okay, sorry. He's 81st overall. AJ Green, my bad. 81st. Still kind of late. And Tyler Boyd, Devontae Parker, AJ Green, Jarvis Landry, 80 to 82nd overall. What do you think, Heath?
That's like, I took AJ Green in our draft today in round 7. So I think, like, that's where I'm comfortable with the risk. The other guys don't really fit with AJ Green because they all have better floors for sure. But I don't think anybody in that range has a better upside.
Right. There's a question of when do you pull the trigger on AJ Green? You know, what's the answer there? Like, who has to be off the board before you're like, all right, it's time.
It's round 7 for me.
And for me, yeah. It's after Fuller's off the board. It's after Gallup's off the board. It's after Boyd. It'd be before Keenan Allen, but I don't usually get him.
Yeah. Well, Heath takes him, I guess.
Yeah.
Took him in the draft we did today. Okay, Heath, should I stop drafting on CBS and just go win on other websites?
No, you should definitely not do that. That would be an unpleasant experience because nobody's product is as good as ours.
It's true.
And everyone should draft on CBS. But I have a draft on Sunday that's on ESPN, and I have one on Wednesday that's on Yahoo. Like, that happens. We play on different sites, so it's good to know where the values are. What do you want me to give you? These, like, 2 or 3 at a time? How would you like to do this?
Yeah, why don't you give us these 3? So look at ESPN first, and these 3 wide receivers that you've identified right out of the gate as good values.
And ESPN's, it's good to know what the, like, the standard setting is at each of these places. ESPN's is full PPR, Yahoo's is half PPR. So just kind of keep that in mind. Shockingly, Devontae Adams is 19th in ESPN ADP as the 5th wide receiver behind DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, Julio Jones, and Michael Thomas. Calvin Ridley is wide receiver 20 in the 4th round, which 4th round for Calvin Ridley is what we're seeing on a lot of sites, but wide receiver 20. Right behind him, Cooper Kupp at wide receiver 21 at 45th overall.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good. Yeah, I would not mind starting my team with 2 running backs, although if Devontae Adams were there, I'd have to take him late in the 1st round and then getting Calvin Ridley, Cooper Kupp.
I mean, this
3 receiver league, you take all 3 of them.
This makes the Michael Thomas, Devontae Adams start possible from the middle of the draft.
It's true. James Conner is going 51st overall. I don't think we have to expand on that, but James Conner.
Draft him.
Yeah, draft
him. Round 4, happily.
And Tariq Cohen, 90th overall. Yeah, I guess we don't have to expand on that. So Hayden Hurst, tight end 12, 112th overall.
I drafted him today in the draft. This is amazing. In round 8. And like, that was an eye opener for me because a lot of times I'm ending up with Hunter Henry or Darren Waller, because someone's reaching for Hurst before the end of that tier of three in front of him. And that, I think that's only an industry thing. That is not happening in normal drafts. And if you want to wait on tight end, Hayden Hurst is probably going to be there in round 9 or 10.
Deep sleepers on ESPN, Heath.
Yeah. Antonio Gibson at pick 147. Chase Edmonds at pick 187. Jonnu Smith at pick 189. And Alan Lazard at 190.
I think Ben would be very happy with the running backs I took and the team that we just drafted. But I was, because I think I didn't take Chase Edmonds, so I think I took Alexander Mattison. How do you choose between Alexander Mattison? I have Latavius Murray and Madison. That's what it was. Latavius Murray, Alexander Mattison, Chase Edmonds, Tony Pollard. Like, how do you decide who you want?
It depends on the rest of your running back group. For me, like, I'm usually waiting a little longer for running backs. And then when I'm building out my running back group, I want a mix of upside and startable players. I mean, I don't just shoot for floor, but I need a couple of guys that have some floor. And then Pollard and Madison are obviously, they're more pure handcuffs. I think Edmonds could have a role. Who was the other you said?
Latavius.
Yeah, I have those guys all ranked within five spots of each other in my rankings. I have Edmonds highest, then Madison, Pollard, and then Murray two spots behind Pollard. But all of those guys I would take depending on where I'm at and what I've built out so far. When you're drafting a team, you got to consider like what do you have covered? Do you have floor covered at this position? Do you have enough upside built into your roster? Edmonds, I think, has tons of upside and some potential standalone value. That's why he would be highest for me. But okay. Madison Pollard are both upside guys as well.
I think it's an interesting exercise to ask, like, if you told me this, hopefully doesn't happen, but all four of those starters are not playing, who do you rank the highest?
Probably Pollard.
Latavius. I saw it last year and he had two week winning games.
Yeah.
I think it's Latavius or I don't know.
Maybe Madison, actually.
That's the thing is like Madison has probably the most likely back to get injured in front of him.
Yeah.
But Madison would probably be fourth for me if that were to happen, because I'm less certain that he would get all the targets.
I think they all be really good, though.
they'd all be top 20 running backs.
Yeah.
This is a super important discussion. Speaking of super important discussions, when you're taking your backups, think about this question. If they actually get their chance, how good would they be? Not just, oh, I think that guy in front of him is injury prone. He's going to get hurt. That stuff's hard to predict. How good would he be? How much are you giving yourself legitimate upside?
Okay, so to recap ESPN, Davante Adams, Calvin Ridley, Cooper Kupp, they're going too late. Davante Adams 19th, Ridley 42nd, Kupp 45th as wide receivers 20 and 21. James Conner is 51st overall, Tariq Cohen 90th overall, Hayden Hurst 112th overall, the 12th tight end off the board. Deep sleepers on ESPN, Antonio Gibson, Chase Edmonds at 147, Edmonds at 187, Jonnu Smith 189, Alan Lazard 190th overall.
And it probably doesn't matter what those numbers are, because most drafts on these two sites are not deep enough for people to be drafted. Like, that is more of a percentage of the drafts where they're just not getting drafted at all. And a lot of those guys in the 180s aren't. Gotcha. So like those are, I just look for guys after the first 13 rounds.
All right. So let's go over to Yahoo. Who are the standards? Remember, half PPR, as Heath mentioned, that's the default on Yahoo. It's the two running backs in the second round.
Miles Sanders at pick 20, Austin Eckler at pick 23. And I love both of those.
Yeah. If you had the 12th pick and they were both there, would you take them? Both of them? Heath?
I might. If Adams was gone, yeah.
Okay. DJ Moore, 39th overall, wide receiver 14. Y'all know how much we love him. So how about these mid-round picks that you like on Yahoo, Heath?
Yes, Ben, I'm going to say something nice about Ronald Jones.
Nice.
87th overall on Yahoo. So I think it's a good question for Ben, because I'm not actually targeting Ronald Jones, but if I was in round 6 or 7 and needed a running back, I would take him. But as someone who has taken him at the end of round 4 or often in round 5, if you're in a league where you see his average draft position on this side is this, and you're not with industry experts, how long do you wait and risk missing him?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It would have to, I mean, I hope you know your league a little bit. If I don't know my league very well, I probably don't go much later than round six. The leagues where I've taken him in round four are non-PPR only. I will start considering him in later in round five. But if you know you can wait on him, then yeah, I would push that back to round six. If you think there, you know, you're in a league with a lot of people who aren't really paying attention to these kinds of things and kind of just draft off the list, then I might wait till round seven.
Hey, guess what? I drafted Ronald Jones in the draft we did today, round five. Okay, so Ronald Jones, pick 87. You also like T.Y. Hilton, 69th, and Kareem Hunt, 75th overall.
Yeah, and I like Hunt more than Hilton in that range. I mean, I like Hunt more than Ronald Jones. So I'd be happy to take, like, if I could take Kareem Hunt in round five and Ronald Jones in round six, I don't really need to take any running backs in the first four rounds.
Marvin Jones. Ooh, 117th overall. Where's the respect for Marvin Jones?
Ben, would you take Marvin Jones in round 10, or is he just, no, off your board?
I mean, I'd consider it, but probably the way I'm building my roster, I wouldn't have a need for that type of a receiver at that point is the real answer. It's not that I don't think he's a decent enough value at that point.
Okay. Yeah. It's a good value on Marvin Jones. Zach Moss. Sorry, I'm just going to wrap up. Zach Moss, 135th overall. Latavius Murray, 139th overall. And we've heard good things about Zach Moss. Maybe he's their passing downs guy, but 135th overall. We're talking, some people in our leagues are taking Zach Moss, I don't know, late round six, round seven, round eight, six to eight, I'd say. So getting him after in the double digit rounds is great.
That was the thing that I loved the most about this exercise was like guys that I never get to draft because of I'm drafting with the same seven guys every single time.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, they're a nice value on this site. Yeah. I'm going to go over there where Ben is not and get some of that guy.
All right. The deep sleepers on Yahoo.
Jamison Crowder is 155th on Yahoo. Now he's not as valuable in half PPR, but I think he's still probably a number three receiver.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, that would be, in my opinion, like the kind of guy you want to pair if you've got several high upside wide receivers that don't have very much floor. Jamison Crowder can cover you.
Jamison Crowder, his 16-game pace based on 13 games with Sam Darnold, 86 catches, 933 yards, 7 touchdowns. Who else?
Tony Pollard, 163. Christian Kirk, 166. Preston Williams, 179. And Boston Scott, 190. Like, Ben doesn't even need his first 10 picks on Yahoo.
Yeah,
he can just draft all of his guys in the double-digit round.
Scott are going to be that late? Good Lord.
Wow.
And I like the Preston Williams thing. He is, I could have cited him on any site. I don't know that I can find a site where he has an ADP in the first 140 picks. And I just think he's like, that's a guy who was good as a rookie in his first eight games. He was leading the team in targets. Like, that is a huge thing. And he was a monster his final year in college. And so if he's fully healthy, I think that's, there's no reason he should be available in the double digit rounds.
All right. So that's a recap. And there's a story going on the website on cbssports.com/fantasy. If you missed anything, check out Heath's story. Always good stuff. And I could say I have one fantasy baseball league that's not on CBS, and it is my best league because the ADP on the other site, the rankings on the other site, it's just not, in my opinion, not as good as the CBS rankings. And I, you know, you take advantage of it. Okay. Let's read those emails that I have somewhere in this big document of notes. Here we go. From Calvin Fournier. Hey, Jonathan, Joey, Jordan, Donnie, and Danny. See, I did not. He told us what it is. I would not have gotten it. I'm proud to say I wouldn't have gotten it. That's New Kids on the Block.
I had a New Kids on the Block shirt when I was a child.
Oh, and you didn't know that? The names?
I knew it. You just said it too quick.
What? I gave you like 3 seconds. There's been a lot of hype over Miles Sanders, and I was all in at first, but now that I take a closer look at who he faced at the end of the year, I'm not so sure. His big finish came up against Miami, the Giants twice, Dallas, and Washington. He got less than 4 points against New England, and if he didn't have that one big run against the Bills, he wouldn't have had a big game there either. Does this concern you about Miles Sanders?
It concerns me that you said less than 4 points instead of fewer than 4 points, but that's all.
Oh, the editor-in-chief. I think it's a worthwhile point. The only thing I'd say is the Giants actually did have a very good run defense, but he wasn't good against the Giants the first time, at least per carry. The second time he was, but he got hurt in that game. But it is one thing that has always been in the back of my mind with Miles Sanders, because I think the NFC East has a pretty tough schedule. There's some good run defenses in there, and they face the AFC North. So I don't know. I mean, does it bother you?
Not really.
Yeah, he's a high-value touch guy. I mean, he had a couple of games. Like, one of those Giants games, he rushed for 3 yards per carry. He had 45 rushing yards. Then one of the Dallas games, he rushed for sub 4 yards per carry. He had 79 rushing yards. But he caught 5 and 4 balls in those games. He caught 3 or more in every game after week 5, except 1. So if you're going to get 3 receptions every game and you're going to be able to score, I think it looks like he had 6 total touchdowns last year. It's not amazing, but you're going to be able to score maybe close to a touchdown every other game. Late in the year, he was certainly doing that. You're going to be fine. You're going to be a good player with upside.
The touchdown thing that Ben brought up is the thing that concerns me a little bit more than the schedule thing, because they were using Boston Scott as their short yardage back at times last year.
I don't know. The one thing I'll say about ridiculous. That, Boston Scott had like 3, I think, short yardage rushing touchdowns, and I'm pretty sure they were in week 17 after Sanders got hurt.
They weren't. We've talked about that before, and I went back and looked it up. He had in the final 4 games is when he actually played a lot of roles. He had 3 green zone touches in that last game, and 3 of his touchdowns did come in there. Sorry, not
right.
All of his TDs, but three of the touchdowns did come in that final game. He also had 3 green zone touches in another one of those final 4 games, and a green zone touch in another game. So 3 of the 4 games, he got at least 1 green zone touch. He also had a 4-yard touchdown run like back in week 8 when he was still a very small bit role guy. So he had 8 different green zone touches. He was more efficient in converting 3 of those in the final game, but they're spread out across 4 games.
Okay, but he had the 3 touchdowns after the Sanders injury.
Yes, he did. Yeah, sorry.
I don't know for a fact they were all after the Sanders injury. I kind of think they were, and I don't even know if it matters. We're probably talking about something that doesn't matter anymore. From Tim Ware, getting ready for my upcoming drafts, been hearing that I should be paying more attention to tiers than rankings. What's the biggest difference between them? Tiers versus rankings.
The biggest difference? Well, I've always used tiers. Mm-hmm. I think it just provides a lot more context is like the way that I would describe the biggest difference. You know, when, you know, if there's a run at a position, you might want to jump into it. If specifically someone in a particular tier of yours gets overlooked, or you know when to avoid it because a whole tier of yours got cleared out and you see value at other positions, I think it just helps you kind of balance the different positions.
Yeah.
Rankings are 2-dimensional, tiers are 3-dimensional.
Yeah. And here's a practical example. Okay. Let's say a quarterback, you have Mahomes and Jackson in tier 1. You have the next 4, Prescott, Wilson, Murray, Watson in tier 2. Then you have Wentz, Ryan, Allen, Breeze, Brady in tier 3. Okay. So let's say those 6 quarterbacks come off the board. You don't have one. You're kind of disappointed. Oh man, I really wanted Kyler Murray, but I didn't get a top 6 quarterback. Well, tier 3 maybe is a huge tier with like 6 or 7 quarterbacks in it. So you don't take QB7 unless, you know, he really falls to you like 3 or 4 rounds later. You wait and try to get someone in that next tier. That's the difference of going just tiers versus rankings. From Kevin, I already added unlimited IR spots for COVID designated players. Is it going to specify a player has COVID on their player card? How's the best way to manage and monitor this on Sunday morning? We are only using this for IR, not for players that are on PUP. What's the best way to deal with this? Because you may not know a player has COVID because that's personal. You'll figure it out. But, I don't know. I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure that maybe there's going to be a COVID list. There is now. So I'm sorry. Maybe I spoke out of turn, but what's the best way to handle this in terms of who can go on your IR spot?
I think like you're going to have a major disastrous headache with infighting if you tried to put too many stipulations on this. I think it's probably best if it's just, if they're out for that week, they can be on it.
So a guy hurts his ankle and he's out and he goes on IR?
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
I would say so too.
I think you're going to be able to know who has COVID though, or who's been exposed to COVID, who's out because of COVID reasons.
Well, okay. Is it that they are out because they were around somebody who had it?
That would matter to me. Yeah. If they are on a list or inactive for COVID reasons, whether they have it or they've been exposed, that it wouldn't matter that specificity. Just, you know, they would, both scenarios would be eligible for that spot.
But one of the things about this type of rule is you got to think about the headache you're putting on yourself. And if you're specifying that COVID thing and then someone breaks it and puts a different, you know, player who's hurt on the list and no one catches it, and then a few weeks later someone does catch it, and then it, you know, it comes up and he says, well, I saw so-and-so do it 3 weeks ago, but I, you know, I didn't point it out, but this, you know, like, do you really want to go look at everyone's roster every week and make sure that they're designating the right types of players, or just, like, you know, do a coverall?
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Thanks, everybody. We got one more episode tomorrow for you. Send in your emails, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com, your Apple Podcast questions as well. For Heath and the two Bens, I'm Adam. Talk to you on Friday.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.